Hello and welcome to the Full Course Show Jumping Podcast. I'm Will Fletcher, and on today's show we have Alexandra Thornton talking about her show and successes at Sopot about a week or so ago, where she did really well. She talks about Cornetto Kay, her longtime companion, as well as many other things. We also have FEI journalist Louise Parks talking all things Olympics with Team Ireland in the forefront. So, no, really good action-packed episode for you today. And also in the world of show jumping, I'll just touch very quickly on the Global Tour in Paris. Fantastic backdrop. They do such a good job of making the show look as good as possible. It just looks absolutely phenomenal. And Ben Mayer, again, wins the Grand Prix there. Did a super job on Ginger Blue. But the biggest storyline, I thought, from there was our guest last week, Jodie Hall-McAteer, pulling it out of the bag, finishing third in the big Grand Prix, by far her best result to date. That was a phenomenal result there for Jodie, where she did so well, only three clears. So she did a fantastic job. So massive congratulations to her. So anyway, on to today's show. Well, joining us today is British show jumper Alexandra Thornton, who's just come back from an extremely successful week at Sopot, riding for the team there. So how are you, Alexandra?
I'm well, thanks. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you very much. We're just about getting prepped for Windsor. So getting all ready for that, which I'm looking forward to. But more importantly, Sopot for you, how was that?
Sopot was this goal that, given the year I've had and all sorts of bad luck with different horses, I wasn't sure if I'd actually make it there. But my team and I were really super determined, and we had our eye on it. And we just went day by day and gave every day 100% and then some, I think. And I was really, I mean, I worked out the way it did. And obviously riding on the Nations Cup team is a huge honor, and it's a lot of fun to be with your teammates. And you know, I think we worked together really well, and it was a great weekend.
Well, what you even failed to mention was the fact that you actually did jump double clear, which is very, very hard to do on Nations Cup teams. They don't happen often. So the fact that you've done that is wonderful. So obviously, like you said, you had a couple of setbacks before you got to Sopot. So to get there in one piece with Cornetto and to jump the double clear, how did that make you feel?
I mean, to be honest, if I told you all the setbacks, we might both start laughing, because honestly, there were so many this year. I mean, really, when it rains, it pours. But after rain comes sun. So that's what Sopot felt like. And I felt like if you don't limit yourself in terms of the way you think you should prepare for something or what you're capable of, including your team, your horse, yourself, and then you're always surprised by what you can do. And I think when you're trained, you know, just to give everyone some background, Cornetto had been out of competition since the end of February. I did everything I could and my team together to get him back in time to jump on one of the teams. We took a conservative approach to make sure he was 100%. He's 15 this year, so obviously you never want to push them too hard. And I jumped the one star in Valkenswaard the first week of June, two classes. I jumped the two star in Offenbach the second week of June. I jumped the 135 and the 140, and then in Sopot, I jumped one class, and then we jumped the Nations Cup. So, we went in a bit cold, so to speak. On the other hand, you know, I've had the horse for a number of years. We know each other super well. He knows his job. Of course, I would have loved to have jumped a few more rounds before going in. But, you know, who's to say that you always have to prepare the way that you've been taught to prepare? and that's really what it taught me, because, you know, had I thought, gosh, I haven't jumped at that level and this and that, I wouldn't have gone. And so that was a huge lesson, and it's a lesson that I've never had before. And actually, I think it was good to go first too, because in a way, you go first, you just have to make your plan and do it, and you can't sit there thinking, you know, gosh, I wish I had jumped one more round before this, or gone to another five star before this, or whatever else. You just have to do it. And so that, yeah, it was, that was really, for me in my riding career, it was actually a really cool moment because I had to sort of set aside all these preconceived notions I have of what you have to.
Definitely, that was very eloquently put. No, it really was fantastic to see you back there jumping double quick. As you said, this you did so little preparation for it, and to go in and jump at that level is extremely hard. Were you nervous warming up? If you thought this was the first time you jumped some, a real big class for a while?
You know what's so strange about it, and I do get nervous sometimes for sure. I'm sure we all do, some to more to a greater extent, some to a lesser extent. But I so had my eye on getting to that Sunday and being there with him, kind of still in the game despite the setbacks with him and the setbacks with, I think, literally every single one of my other horses that I've had this year. That when I finally got there, I was so calm and I was so I just felt this sense of stillness. And I went in the ring, and he was not going to touch a fence that day, and that's how I felt. And I was determined, and it took some courage in terms of, going in that cold and honestly having a lot more to lose than to gain, and just going for it. And it was about, for me, that day was about getting there. It was about getting to that goal, not limiting oneself or one horse by sort of what you wish could have happened to get there, what should have happened, and just doing your best, and it being about that Sunday, not being about, what's to come or what's before. And I think actually that was a really powerful lesson.
Definitely, definitely. And how did you find, jumping first on the team? Was that something that you prefer to do, or was that thrown upon you?
So, I had this mare who I really sadly have just had to retire, named Sherielle, and Sherielle was amazing in the ring. But I think I spent the first 3 months I had her crying because I could never warm up. And I couldn't jump her at home in a straight line. I'd have to sort of like get whiplash over poles on the ground. And every day you would restart. There was no like retaining what you had accomplished the day before. And I remember being in Antwerp, that show there was next to the river under a tent in April. With the rain going sideways and the wind flapping the tent, and I could not jump a fence. I had to go in the ring, trotting up and down the ramp to go in the ring. And I had a couple shows like this, and then I got the system where I would warm up before the course walk. I would walk the course, I'd jump one fence, being as alone in the warm up as I could be, because she would spin around at everyone. And she'd spin around, if a horse was jumping next to her, she'd land and just literally spin, and you'd be on the ground. And I just had to learn to go first. And so I spent 5 years going first in, let's say 4-star Grand Prix, some of the 5-star classes, some of, I think, in, Dublin was maybe the biggest, things I went first in. But actually there's also a huge lesson in that too, sort of being able to make your plan and just you go with your plan. And of course, sometimes your plan goes out the window and you're in the ring, you have to adjust. But sometimes watching too many doesn't actually help. And so Di asked me when we did the draw on the Friday if I'd want to go first. And, of course, it's a sort of intimidating position. But I thought, you know what, actually, especially given how I'm going into this cold, I think it's quite good I go first because I won't have the chance to watch anyone and think, what on earth are you doing trying to go first and trying to jump in this with the preparation you've had? Yeah, that were my thoughts about going first. So I think it worked out well. I think for sure it's something I have had the benefit of getting. I mean, I don't know if you can say you're ever good at going first, going early at least. So I definitely, I thank Sherielle and the many times I was spun off onto the ground for that. And it worked out on Sunday. So that was, yeah, that was that felt really good.
Definitely. I think that is something that I have found, especially with one of mine who's very different to many other horses. When you're watching a big Grand Prix, I usually do better going early because you don't change your plan. And I think that's a lot of times when you watch a big class and you're late to go, you go, oh, they've done, say, seven up this distance. And I was planning to go six, or I was planning to go eight. And it sometimes makes you stick to your plan that you've spent ages, you know, in walking the course and all leading up to it, what you want to do, how you want to ride. So it can sometimes play to the advantage, but then I'm sure there's most people shouting at you saying, no, going later, you get to see everything. And that really, really helps. But another thing in Sopot that a lot of horses really did struggle with was the heat there. It was so hot. And how did you find that you coped with that?
But one thing I would add, the disadvantage of going first is the time allowed, which I have struggled
Yes.
with. So I don't want to sound and, you know, it's like there haven't been downsides for sure or weaknesses. The heat. Yeah, I mean, it was super hot. It was a massive heat wave. You'd never think Poland would have those conditions, or at least I hadn't. What I would say is, in terms of Cornetto, during his period out of competition, I kept him as fit as possible, because I wanted to be ready to go when the moment came. So he never had a day without a saddle on his back. He did the aqua treadmill. He was often worked twice a day. We'd take him in the woods, you know, different things. So I think. And he's a horse with a lot of blood. I mean, if anything, it helped me a bit because it took the edge off, because I was a bit worried how wild he was going to be in the warm-up, particularly given he hadn't been at a show with that kind of atmosphere for a while. I mean, listen, in the second round, he was still bucking in the warm-up. So I don't think the heat, you know, it was like he was eight, not 15. But for sure, I think other horses, you know, had a harder time with it. And that's always, you know, that's a difficult condition you can't really prepare for.
Definitely. No, it's and that also for you didn't jump the Grand Prix on Cornetto, and that must have really helped to get to the second round. You saw a lot of horses that did jump the Grand Prix that really, really struggled in the Nations Cup, and the especially if you jump well in the first round of the Nations Cup, the second round. So that was on your part, good judgment, obviously knowing your horse, that must have being a beneficial plan.
I mean, you know, I was still, I mean, building him up, so to speak. So I thought, I'm here for the team. The team is on Sunday. I saw the weather for the weekend. I'm just going to keep, and he's 15, you know, so I'm just going to keep him, sort of preserve him for it. That this is the reason I'm here. And I had my new mare there, who I had jumped two shows before, and I decided it was better to jump the 160 class on the Saturday, because it was a bit, yeah, I was slightly jumping into the deep end by trying to jump the Grand Prix so soon. So definitely that of course, you know, if you've got more, you know, got more in the tank if you haven't, you know, taken more out. But for me, it was sort of a decision around just kind of still being in my third show back, building him up, being there for that purpose. Put everything. I just wanted to put 100% into Sunday.
Definitely. Well, and you did that and some, and to jump double
No
clear
time.
again, can't say well done enough, but that was fantastic. So moving on, what's your plans for the next few weeks to a couple of months?
So it's funny because I feel like that was such a target I had, and now I'm like, okay, now what's next? You know, to be honest, I'm kind of I'm slightly regrouping at the moment. I'll do Valcanzar next week. I'll probably do some of the globals in August. You know, I'd love to have him in great shape for the London GCT because obviously that's, you know, that one holds a lot of meaning for me. And then we'll see. I mean, I haven't, to be honest, I haven't. I've been going so sort of day by day and week by week this year just because of the obstacles I've had with, you know, and with various sources, that I, you know, I mean, he's back in fantastic shape, so I hope to, you know, I hope to ride some great Grand Prix and enjoy, you know, having a horse like that. And he's 15, and you know, as you saw, he's in, you know,
Top
top
form.
shape. And so and God, what a joy is that. So just to enjoy him and just to go for it and just be, you know, not, you can't take those for that for granted. I mean, this year, I think COVID has taught everyone that, in so many areas of their lives. But for me this year, last 6 months, the sort of different, the different bits of bad luck I've had with, you know, every one of my horses has just made me really feel like, gosh, when they're in good shape, just make the most of it and just, you know, just enjoy it and go for it.
Yeah, I think that's so true. You spend so much of your time waiting and you end up missing the good times, don't you? Because it's you're always wanting to wait and wait and wait. Oh, we got this, we got this, we got this. But then, you know, what's quite nice is going in and doing well. So it's
Yeah,
so when they're right to
totally. And
go.
what's the point? Yeah. So that's how, and this, I know him so well. I mean, I feel like we have the same handwriting. I mean, we really think together. But it's such a cool feeling, and to have that feeling with an animal in your life as a rider, I think is just the ultimate. Since I was a little girl, I've loved horses. I think I would love riding whether I competed or not. And so I think having these connections with animals and these partnerships you build up over a number of years, and being able to be able to go in a ring and just be totally in sync. It's like this high that's, you know, indescribable. So so with him, I just want to enjoy him while I have him, and you know, and I'm lucky to have him in the shape I do today.
Definitely. And so Cornetto, I love the horse. He always looks fantastic and always looks like he's tries his best. So how was it with you, you know, getting him and getting to grips with him?
So actually, you know, I bought him from Atina, who's a good friend of mine. And she had, it was her ex-husband's horse, and she had had, you know, quite a long, not very pleasant divorce. And I had been quite close to her during that time. And basically she had decided she didn't want to ride the horse because of all the attachments to her ex-husband. And I was stabled in her stable at the time when they split up. So it was the two of us. And so she was, you know, thrilled for him not to go anywhere and stay in the same box and all of the above. So that was, you know, that was a sort of lovely way for him to come into my life. When I got him, for sure, I was a bit intimidated by him because I think, you know, he had also been this sort of dramatic piece in their divorce, and they had been fighting over, or at least her ex-husband had been fighting over keeping him, and da, da, da. And so actually I tried him a year before I bought him, and it was that I had tried him once, and it was sort of by accident, and it was like I was at the stable late one night, and one of the riders was sort of riding him, and she said, why don't you sit on him. And so I then bought him a year later, which sort of just gave enough distance between the tension around the whole situation. So I was thrilled to have him. I was for sure a bit intimidated by him at first, felt like sort of a little girl on someone else's big horse, which I'm sure many girls, maybe many boys, and not to be sexist about it, but many people feel. And obviously Alberto had a fantastic year with him, had been to European Championships. There's definitely a lot to live up to. But I think, you know, whenever I've had a couple horses now, you know, from some of the best riders in the world, which is always a tough act to follow. But you know, horses, they adjust to you and you adjust to them and you become your own partnership. And I think some people questioned whether, you know, a sort of 100 and whatever 30-pound girl could ride him, and not a big, strong guy. And I'd have to talk to him and see what his opinion is. But I think it's turned out to work quite well. Of course, it takes time, and you can't accelerate time together as a partnership. But I think in the end, he's quite happy. You know, with me, and I'm definitely thrilled to have him. So.
Well, he certainly looks like that anyway. And then on your other string of horses, what are the exciting ones you're looking to ride in the coming weeks?
Yeah, so I'm really excited about the mare, my new mare Boobri, who I've had three shows with. She's a 10-year-old. She's just 10. She's done, you know, two sort of bigger classes. And I threw her into the 160 in Sokot. I had two down on the Saturday, but, you know, sort of our fifth class together, was quite pleased. She's really adorable. She's super game. She's kind of very simple in her mind, which is, you know, when you've had a couple ones that are a little, you know, a little sharper or special about different things, it's always so nice to have one that you can just kind of relax on. And so I'm really, yeah, I'm really excited about her. Not many people know her, which is always, you know, nice too, because you kind of write your story together. And then I have Classic Dream, who I hope to have back, probably jumping in August. And he, you know, he's adorable too. I spent the winter getting to know him in Florida, or the two, the whatever 6 weeks I was there of WEF. Dara was super helpful to me with him. And that, you know, always accelerates getting to know a horse when you have the last rider. You know, just even teaching you in the warm-up, you know, how deep can you get to an oxer, or should you jump a vertical with a big ground line, or should you, you know, whatever it is that you should do, should you have a canter pole in front or behind? These little things that if you got a horse cold and you have no information, it takes you a couple weeks or a couple months to figure out. So having him there was super helpful. So I think I got up to speed pretty quickly. We were kind of, you know, ready to go in May, and annoyingly have had a bit of a setback, but I hope kind of hit the ground running when he's back jumping in August.
Super. Well, it's been great to talk to you, and thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Again, I said plenty of times, but fantastic, well done in Sopot, and we'll be really looking forward to seeing how you go over the next couple of weeks and months, and for, yeah, till the next time you come on the podcast anyway. But
absolutely. Which I was reminded of the other day, which I'll just add because I think it will make you laugh, and it will be direct contrast to Sopot. So everyone can hear my failures as well as successes. But Joe Stockdale was obviously with us in Sopot, who is so he's such a lovely guy. And we rode together in Spain in November on a team. And it was his first Five Star Nations Cup, which he did a brilliant job. And he was disappointed because he was a drop score in the two rounds. Which was nothing. I mean, it was incredibly impressive in his Grand Prix and all of the above. But anyway, so Joe was feeling down afterwards, and I remembered, and your mother will remember this, which is why I bring it up. When I rode on my first Five Star Nations Cup team in Falsterbo in, I think, 2012. And I think I literally forgot how to ride. and I think, I mean, I could not make up a worse, more of a train wreck. My mother spent the whole weekend constantly apologizing to everyone for whatever had happened to me during the Nations Cup. And I think I had a score of 29 faults or something like that in one. I mean, it was just horrendous. And I laughed because I don't think I've seen your mother since then, actually, but it was so horrific. So I'm glad I've rebounded from that. And that's long forgotten, but I was laughing at Joe about it, because I said, if you feel bad because you had one down or whatever brilliant result you have, you know, let me tell you about my first Nations Cup that I sort of shudder just thinking about having to watch the video again. So anyway, thank you for having me at a moment of success. I'm sure there will be many ups and downs to follow, but I appreciate being on the podcast.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. That was a great story to end with. No, it's a great thing to tell anyone, because it does not always go as planned, and especially on the Nations Cup, where you put, as you say, you know, how much time and effort you put into getting ready for Sopot. The same probably for Falsterbo, but very drastically different scores. So there we are. Show thank jumping, you. The weird and wonderful
yeah,
world.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you so much, Will.
No, thank you so
much.
And
good luck this week in Windsor.
Thank you very much. Speak soon.
Okay, see you soon. Bye. Bye for now.
Well, joining us today to talk all things Team Ireland and the Olympics is FBI and Irish independent journalist Louise Parks. How are you today, Louise?
I'm great, thank you, Will.
Well, thank you very much for joining us. So over the past, I think it was about 10 days ago now, the Irish team was released for the games, and the team being Bertram Allen, Pacino Amiro, Darragh Kenny, and VDL Cartello, Kian O'Connor and Kilkenny P, and then the travelling reserve and fourth rider, obviously with the new rules, can be switched in, is Shane Sweetnam and Carlin Vant Venerhoff. I think if I've pronounced that correctly.
That's very correct, yes.
Well, there we are. The Belgian names I really do struggle with. So, first thing, at first glance, what do you think of that team?
I think when I was with you last time, I predicted all four of those riders, which would be the top three. I really wasn't clear about, but I don't see any big surprises in the selection. Maybe Dara's being one of the top three might be a little bit of a surprise because he hasn't been riding this VDL Cartello very long, but the quality of Dara's sort of riding and his ability to get on any horse and make a great job of it probably comes as no surprise to anybody. And Michael Blake would not have chosen him for sure unless he was extremely confident of them as a partnership.
Definitely. And that's, I wanted to get a little bit later, but I think we'll start with that there. So Darragh Kenny, obviously, one of Ireland's best riders, if not the best. He's such a fantastic rider. Had the mishap with the owners last year, and I think we'll probably end up seeing at least two of his old horses jumping at the games with other riders. And then, so he's had to regroup. And this, his horse, VDL Cartello, he's only been riding for 3 months now and only done four shows, which for an Olympic combination is very, very little. So how do you expect that to, you know, how do you think that will be at the games?
It'll be interesting to see, obviously, because, as you say, they haven't been together very long. But I've known Darragh since he was a little chap. And he has an ability to get up on any horse and make a good job of it. And I've been watching him doing it since he was a kid. And I think that's one of the things that plays out well for Irish riders generally, is that they're very flexible, very good at you know, building up relationships with horses pretty quickly. And obviously, Michael Blake has seen something in this partnership that, you know, made that his choice. Most of the rest of us haven't gotten to see very much of it because there hasn't been an awful lot happening. So it's really a hard one to judge. But I would think that it probably was done maybe on the basis of the type of horse that this is as well. Because, well, one of the phenomenons for me over the last few weeks as I've been watching the Nations Cup series is how certain horses have bounced back really well after the sort of break over the last year, and how some are just not maybe at the top of their game yet. They probably will be, but they're just not yet. And I imagine that what Michael was looking for was horses that are really firing on all cylinders at the moment, because that's what you want to be going to Tokyo with.
Definitely, definitely. And then the other two riders, Bertram and Kian. Kian, obviously, a really experienced championship rider with his individual bronze at London. But both of those two are 9-year-old horses, which is the youngest a horse can be at an Olympics. Yeah. Which, so you've got two riders on 9-year-olds and then one on a very new horse. Yeah. How do you think the nine-year-old horses are very, very talented? I think they're both at the top of the 9-year-old rankings. But how do you think that'll, you know, those horses would be so little experience, obviously no experience at championship level. But with that little experience and only just stepping up to big classes this year, how do you think that'll fare at the Olympics?
Yeah, hard to say, isn't it? I suppose one of the other phenomenons of the last few weeks, as I say, as I've been watching the sport play itself out, is I noticed, particularly at the last leg of the Nations Cup in Sopot in Poland, the heat, Will, was crippling. I think you saw that with Will Funnell's horse, which led to his accident. The heat was incredible for a Polish heat, and it's going to be even hotter in Tokyo. And the younger horses seem to cope really well with it. I think maybe with energetic, enthusiastic young horses will manage quite well in the heat if you have the right type. And I think these two look like they are designed for that. We're a bit excited here in Ireland because both Pacino Amiro and Kilkenny are Irish bred. And, you know, the Irish breds are making a return to the top end of the sport at last. So we're a little bit excited about all of that, having two of them on our show jumping team. So I would think neither of these riders would be going with 9-year-olds that they didn't think could cope. And Kian certainly is a man who leaves absolutely no stone unturned. So I would be quite confident of it. And also, I noticed that that lovely Mumbai horse ridden by Christian Kukuk in Sopot on the winning team, the winning German team. That's also a 9-year-old. And they were really gung-ho about the fact that he would be part of their Olympic squad, because they feel he's got everything going for him. He's an absolutely stunning horse.
Definitely. Oh, that's one horse that I've really, you know, honed in on over this past year. It just has looked fantastic. But
it's a machine.
It really is unbelievable. And but you know, the 2 9-year-olds there, like you said, Irish bred. You said it's very exciting for Ireland to have 2 Irish bred on the Irish team, because it's been a bit of a lull in the past few years, and the amount of Irish horses competing at the top level, it's been mainly dominated by your Belgians, your Dutch, your Germans. So that must make the Irish team even prouder to have 2 of the best 9-year-olds in the world be part of that Olympic team.
Yeah, I mean, and for Irish breeders, it's a huge thing. You know, Irish breeding of show jumpers has been going through a really big sea change for the best part of 20 years now, where we've embraced the whole warm blood element into the stud book. And so you have this mixture of very traditional Irish breds crossed with warm bloods. And in the beginning, there was kind of, you know, a protest, or some people felt it wasn't quite what we should be trying to do. But it's clearly paying dividends at this stage, because these horses are emerging now as real world-class horses. So it's very exciting for the breeders that once again we can kind of stand up with the big boys. And it's partly, of course, because the way the sport has changed, you need a different type of horse. And we're breeding those horses now. So that's a bit exciting.
Definitely. And then the Shane Sweetman part, I think most people have thought at the start of the year, he would have almost been heading the Olympic team. How has it come that he's been, he very well might get to, you know, to be on the team, obviously with the individual being first, but how has it come that he's not been part of the first three?
It's a good question. I don't know. I think we'd have to ask Michael Blake about that. Because I thought Shane was, you know, definite for it. But, you know, when you can only have three, and you have more than three that are kind of knocking on the door, I suppose you have to make some kind of decisions and stand over them. And Michael seems to have felt that this was the best way to go. I'm sure he had his own reasons. I just think Shane has been a rock for the Irish team for such a long time. You know, the way the competitions will work out in Tokyo as well, who knows who will get to jump on what days, because that's the format is so untried, and we're going to be seeing lots of differences, I think, than we have in previous Olympics. So maybe he will get to jump.
Definitely. So anyway, now moving a little bit on to their chances at the Olympics. So firstly, as a team, how do you think they will fare against the other competitors?
Yeah, I mean, there are going to be so many strong teams. I just know that when Ireland sends out a team, they don't go out to do anything except to win. So they'll be giving it everything they've got. So I suppose it depends on how well the horses deal with the heat, how well they cope with Santiago Varela's tracks. It'd be interesting to know what he has up his sleeve. You know, it's very challenging for him too in this intense heat. You don't know what kind of idea he has about how he can challenge them safely. But I would think they'd be in with as good a chance as any, to be honest. And Ireland are going to these Olympics as Nations Cup champions, And that really did give us a huge boost. So I think there's a real sense that at last we're right back with a team that is seriously in contention.
Well, that's great to hear. And then what are the other countries do you think that might be in with the chance of being up there in the podium?
Well, having seen the Germans coming out over the last few weeks, I just think there are so many different German combinations that are stunning. I mean, they won in Sopot with three double clears, and they made it look quite easy.
Yeah.
and if you can do that, then you're definitely in a strong position. They've got such a great range of people that they can call up at any time. But this is the great thing about team sport, it fluctuates so quickly and so easily. And then the three rider format is going to be, electrifying, actually. I think we may not all, not everybody seems to like it, but I actually think it is going to make for pretty spectacular sport, because mistakes are just going to be punished so hard. So even the best of the best can make them. But the Swiss obviously are also hugely strong. They've got so much talent in their side. And then the Swedes were brilliant in at St. Gallen, at the where the British team pulled out, if you might remember, because I don't think they like the weather, which I thought was a bit surprising. They're not used to rain.
Bit ironic, isn't it?
And the Swedes were just brilliant. And I loved seeing Rolf Jørgen Benson back to his very best. He's somebody I really admire as a rider. They put up a real gutsy performance that day. The Belgians then are just, they're really firing on all cylinders. I have to go back again to the Swiss, because with Martin Fuchs and Steve Gerda on any team, you just need good backup, really, don't you? So I think they're going to be a real powerhouse. Where do you go from there? Who's going to come from America, do you think, Will?
What do you reckon? I think Laura Kraut, that Ballotinu, that looks really, really good at the moment. McLean's always there or thereabouts.
Jessica.
And then you've got Kent. Has Beasy got a horse at the moment? I've struggled to.
Yeah, I haven't seen her on the myself in recent times. Kent was flying in Rome. But yeah, they sound like really major contenders. And no matter where they go, they always have to be feared, let's be honest. Yeah. And what about your crew?
Well, that's the thing, is obviously we're still pending a announcement. And I think we probably have two of your top 10 favourites for an individual medal. And I think before, when obviously Hart's Destiny, which we all are really sorry about for Holly, I think that three riders would have really suited them. Whereas now, I think you could have done with the four riders, because you have two, and then that is going to be there or thereabouts. And then the next two riders, you can about piece together.
Yes.
And when you don't have that luxury, I think putting all the, either on Denver or Harry and Romeo, or on Emily and Winning Good, all on their day could jump a fantastic round.
Yeah.
But I don't know if we could predict the consistency, but I guess for two rounds at the Olympics, you never know. So,
something I think these Olympics could be like, really, really surprising in so many ways, because you've got a lot of youth on your side now, physical fitness, all that's going to play a huge role as well. So I think being young and keen could be a real asset. So who knows where the surprises are going to spring from, because there are bound to be plenty. But my real fascination is going to be with how the format itself plays itself out.
I'm really looking forward to that. I think that's going to make the sport a completely different dynamic, because obviously the Nations Cups are the pinnacle, and everyone involved with the sport, it's the main thing. Everyone wants to jump double clear in the Nations Cup. But I think sometimes when it's a little bit hard to follow and people aren't quite sure at all times who's in the lead, I think that having the three riders is going to be really, really interesting, because that last rider is going to, they always had to have be really good under pressure, but now that last rider is going to have to be extremely experienced.
It'll
so
need
I think,
nerves of steel.
Yeah, definitely.
It was interesting. I did an interview with Max Salmon, who was the original world creator of the World Cup Series a few weeks ago for the FEI. And during the course of that interview, I was we were talking about the three rider format, and he's really into it. He thinks it's the only way for the sport to be going. And one of the things I was saying, you know, but, you know, so many people like the old way of doing things. And he was saying, yes, but it's really important that the audience understands every horse comes into the ring counts.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And he said, and remember that sport isn't about justice. It's about, it can be a cruel thing. It's about a winner. And that's all it's about, getting a winner. And I thought that was really good point, you know, that that just because maybe we have an older way of doing things and we've always loved it, that maybe it is time to start looking at the options. Not all the riders love it, of course, and I understand that. But as a spectator, I hope people will get a much better grasp this time round.
Definitely. I'm gonna float something at you, because obviously it's I'm wholeheartedly behind it. And I was talking to Michael Blake about it on a older podcast where he did not like it at all. I went away from that, and because I think the Nations Cups need a little bit of tinkering just to keep. It's hard to sit through for three hours. It ends up being. My theory is you could meet it halfway. I think you could have four in the first round with a drop score, and then you drop one rider just to have three riders in the second round. So then you're always following it, and everyone knows who's in the lead. And then you've also had a dummy run before that, because like he said, if you have one that might be a little bit iffy at water, if it gets eliminated the first round, you've got that drop score, and then they're not in the second round. But the second round, they've already had a run round.
Yeah.
I think that's something the FBI should consider. I think it would make it a little bit easier to watch for the, you know, for the general public.
Yeah, it's funny. There's been all sorts of interesting suggestions and really only coming out of the woodwork now that people are really focused on Tokyo. And one of them is that somebody was reminding me recently that there was a series of Division Two Nations Cups where they only had three riders per team in the last few years, and it worked out perfectly well. So, I mean, it's very doable. And I don't remember the reasoning, specific reasoning behind it, but it has happened before and it's worked perfectly well. But all it is about intensifying the pressure on each individual rider. I'm not sure that really having four in the first round and three in the second would be easy for the public to follow.
You don't think so?
I'm not convinced. And nor am I convinced I'm going to love it when I see the three rider format either. But I'm intrigued, and I'm quite excited about it now, because I think it'll give us all a really different focus on the whole thing. And it's going to be, literally every stride counts. Every moment is going to count, instead of saying, oh, well, not to worry, so-and-so will make up for that, or, you know,
definitely,
you know, making excuses for people maybe sometimes. But I think it could be fascinating.
I really hope so. So anyway, just before we leave, what are your medal predictions for the individual at the Olympics?
For
do you have
the
any
individual?
Yeah, I was leaving you for the team, because I think that's a lot harder to predict. But for the individual, what do you think?
Gosh, that's a cruel question, really. For the individual, you see, will all the horses that go? Yeah, okay. Let's have a think about this. I have to say my heart was taken by Mumbai in Sopot. I don't know why. This was a horse that was jumping like he could jump twice the height of the fence, and with all the enthusiasm in the world, he was loving what he was doing. And it's a joy to watch a horse like that, isn't it? So
yeah.
I don't know. Will he stand up to it as a 9-year-old? I have no idea. But at least the individuals will be sorted first. I would have a real feeling about Kian O'Connor with Kilkenny, whether for a medal, because, you know, when you know this man's sort of modus operandum and the attention to detail, the determination he really believes in this horse.
Yeah.
It's hard to look past him. Then the Swiss lads, you can just never look past them either. I mean, Martin Fuchs is just a force to be reckoned with on any horse these days. He seems to have strings of lovely ones.
Definitely.
Steve Gerda is always dynamite. And then Rolf Joren the other day. I was captivated by him. It was like watching somebody coming back. Don't know what the Swedish selection is now, but it was like watching somebody come back to their comfort zone, watching him perform in St. Gallen. So, yeah, I'm not giving you an answer, am I? No. Definitely think we could be looking at a German, a Swiss, and I'd like to think an Irish in the top three.
Ooh. Horrendously offended that Ben Mayer and Explosion isn't in that top three.
Sorry, overlooked Ben Mayer and Explosion. Sorry about that. Yeah, that's a little bit, that's me being a bit Irish, maybe. I don't know, sorry about that. Yeah, I'm not surprised you're offended. Of course, Ben is a huge force to be reckoned with as well. Just I haven't seen him do much. I'm not a Global Champions Tour follower, so I therefore haven't, and this is the way the sport has gone. You can only follow so much at a time, as I was saying to you before we started out. My focus this week is on Rotterdam, yet there's lots of other things going on. You've got Windsor, but when the sport is so, it gets busy again, it can be hard to focus on all the parts of it. But of course, Ben and Explosion, whoa, they are an amazing partnership.
Yeah, that's who I reckon for the, I think they have as good a chance as any for an individual medal. But it really is tough because just one fence, isn't it? That's it. Yep. It's not like a Europeans or a Worlds where the best rider will always win. Like, as we know in London, when Nick Skelton led the way the whole way, if that was a World or Europeans where it's cumulative score, they would have won anyway. At the Olympics, it is who's going best on the best day. But
on the day,
if you look back at all the individual gold winners over the years, I don't think there's ever been one that's been undeserved. So,
well, that's about the size of it. And I mean, I think of the heartbreak for Ben in Rotterdam at the Europeans. You know.
Definitely.
So maybe it's his moment.
There is a lot of there's quite a few that have won silver at the championships before that have gone on to win gold.
Yeah,
with Martin Fuchs and Peder Fredriksson both doing that recently. I think hopefully that trend follows because God, we'd love to see a back to back individual gold medal winner for the Brits. But
how dare I even overlook him?
Well, anyway, it's been a pleasure to have you on, Louise. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll hopefully have you back after, as you say, Ireland have a good chance for the team medals. So have you on after that, if that occurs. That would be brilliant.
That'd be great.
But thank you so much for joining us, and we'll speak soon.
Okay. Bye.
Bye bye. Thank you so much to Alexandra and Louise for coming on today's show. It was great to chat to them both. And thank you so much for listening. Please rate, review, subscribe, do everything you can to support the podcast. We really appreciate it. And we'll be back again next week.